Hello, people. This is the September SVCB membership meeting, and it's just after the picnic. And I want to thank Victor and his picnic gang for such a nice picnic. That was very nice. So, introductions here. I am Mike Keithley. I'm the president.
I'm Susan Schulter. I'm Vice President and Chair of Braille Literacy Committee. Okay, hold on.
I'm Jim Unitas from VTA.
Don Wilcox, Hospitality Chair.
Alan Jones Greeter, and helping Donna with the lunch money. Sunnyvale.
Naomi Grubb, Corresponding Secretary and Coffee Committee with Don.
Eileen Skidmore, Hospitality Committee.
She's very hospitable.
Yes, she is. Rose Dieterding, period.
Lorraine Brown, Director.
George Belvin, pedestrian. VTA has told me I will not be able to come to any more Saturday or Sunday events.
Art Takahara, Mountain View.
Michelle McGrew, fundraising chair from Mountain View.
Amy Shaw, Palo Alto.
Ely Cook, Mountain View.
Leanne Nakagawa, San Jose.
Steve Nakagawa, Director, San Jose.
Charlie Stein, Can Crusher, Water Collector from Palo Alto.
Good morning, Katie Heatley from Outreach.
Anna Bellino, San Jose.
Jack Saverson, San Jose.
Good morning, Vernon.
Kathy Hogue, San Jose.
Ken Hogue, elevator operator, San Jose.
Barbara Dickinson, Mountain View.
Carol Ann Owens, Mountain View.
Top of the morning to everybody. I wish to welcome everyone to Monta Vista Terrace to the September meeting of 2009. And I hope everybody has a good one.
Did you tell your name?
Huh?
Your name again?
Kanzi.
Oh, okay.
Good morning. Ruben Armenta and Roxy, Santa Clara.
Albert Chapson, Extinguished Rehabilitation Counselor.
Did I get you done?
Donna Sanchez, in charge of lunches.
Donna.
What?
Did you go?
You did me.
Okay, Mike, have everybody. Oh, wait a minute. We have one more person I missed. I'm sorry.
Judy Polacek from Mountain View.
And Roger.
I'm sorry. Yeah, but you're going to give it to me anyway, so.
Yeah, sooner or later.
And this is Roger Peterson, program chair and newsletter editor, and newsletter next weekend, don't forget, from Mountain View. And while I now have the mic, if you don't mind, Mike, I'll go ahead and
go.
Do. Okay.
Go ahead.
The speaker today, who already introduced himself, is Jim Unitas from VTA. Among other hats that he wears, he staffs the Committee on Transportation Access, which is the Disability Advisory Committee to VTA, and I believe he also manages the contract that VTA has with Outreach to provide ADA paratransit. So, and I appreciate Art Takahara's help in securing Mr. Unitas as a speaker, and without further ado, Jim Unitas.
Thank you, Roger. A pleasure to be here this morning. This mic's working okay?
Yes.
Okay, good. Roger is exactly right in terms of what I do at VTA. Probably a couple other things I just want to mention that my department does. It impacts all of our riders. My department's also responsible for scheduling all the bus routes and rail routes, where they go, how often they run, what days and times they run, so where bus stops are, accessibility to bus stops. I'll talk a little bit about that at the end, but that is another piece of my responsibilities. I wanted to talk a little bit today about what's happening at VTA financially and how that impacts the services we're providing in both paratransit and our bus and rail service. There's been a lot going on in the last 6 months or so. Having some major impacts on how and when and where we provide our services. A little background on our financial situation. VTA operating expenses are covered about 70% from sales tax. So what happens in the economy and how the economy goes has great impacts on the revenues we receive. Only about 13-14% of our revenues are actually collected by passenger fares, so we really rely on those sales tax monies to keep our budget balanced. Unfortunately, in that area, we've been seeing some really dramatic declines. You know, it really is a reflection of what's going on in the economy in general. It's not just impacting VTA. It's impacting all of the other transit agencies around AC Transit, SamTrans. It's really a nationwide issue where transit systems are needing to decrease services and raise fares to keep their budgets balanced. We projected, for example, in this last fourth quarter of 2009, we projected that our sales tax revenues would be down 5-8% over last year. They're actually down 27%. We just received those that information. So that was just the end of July. We got that information. That's huge, huge decreases. Hopefully that's the bottom. We've heard from some economists now and, you know, locally and federally that, you know, maybe we've hit the bottom. But the big issue is nobody really expected those kinds of drop-offs. The other thing that really hurt us was when the state adopted their budget, they eliminated all funding for transit assistance. So we used to get about $10 to $12 million a year from the state to support our transit programs. That's zero now. So that was right off the top, we lost that money, and that was a significant hit to our financial situation and our budget. No good news there on the financial front. Hopefully we've hit bottom. Hopefully things will start to stabilize. But we've had discussions with our board just in this past week that we're really going to need to relook at how we deliver services. Our general manager has talked to the board. We have a variety of board committees this last week and has been talking to them that we don't want to decrease services anymore. We're going to be proposing to do some of that, and I'll talk some more about that, but that's really not the way we want to operate our business. But we need to look at how we can deliver the services we provide in the most cost-effective manner. So there's going to be a lot of things going on in the next few months. The board has a workshop scheduled in December where we're probably going to be bringing to them a variety of information on that. But that's future. But I just wanted to give you that sort of financial context because things really are pretty grim right now here at VTA and at other transit properties. SamTrans, AC Transit are both decreasing services and raising fares. VTA was lucky in the sense that we did have a good, healthy reserve of money. Our board had mandated that we put in the bank 15% of our operating monies in the bank for rainy day. The rainy day is here, and we're using that money. So as we've balanced our budget in for the July start, we did a lot of different work with our labor unions. We're doing furloughs just like a lot of state employees are. We have wage freezes that we've implemented. The fare increase that goes in October, and we've dipped into our reserves to balance the budget. But we're getting to the point where we're almost using all our reserves and getting ourselves into a real state of financial concern. I'm going to talk a little bit now about some more of the programmatic issues, our paratransit service and our bus and rail service, what's happening with those now due to all this financial dilemma that we've seen over the last year. As you're all aware, on October 1st, we will have a fare increase for bus, rail, and paratransit. The base paratransit fare goes up to $4. This was part of the budget that the board adopted in July. They really looked closely at a lot of different items to make sure that that budget was balanced. Our original proposal included eliminating most of the premium services for paratransit. We held a lot of public meetings in the community and really heard from folks that they use those premium services. We carry over 1 million passengers a year on paratransit, but only 2 or 3% use the premium services. But we heard that when they use them, they're really important. They really help people, make their trips and serve their needs, that even though they don't use them often or they're not used frequently, when they're needed, they are very important. So we took a step back and looked at those proposals that we had made and adjusted them. We kept the premium services. We did raise the fares on those. Pretty much all the premium services will be at $16. We normalized the fare for the premium services. But most of our passengers won't use them. 98% of our passengers on paratransit ride between 6 in the morning and 8 at night. So, the majority of passengers use the core service that we provide. I think the biggest change, while there's some changes with open returns and the second vehicle, the major change is how we implement our service area and the hours we operate for paratransit. In the past, the board adopted policy to allow paratransit service to be operated basically countywide, throughout our service area from 5 in the morning to 2 a.m. That was above and beyond what the Americans with Disabilities Act required. The Act requires that paratransit be provided in the same hours and areas that the fixed route bus operates in those areas. That was a policy change that our board did adopt in July to be effective on October 1st. I know Outreach is working very hard with clients now to look at their trip-making patterns, to look at their trip histories and what they do to try to minimize the impact on people, but there will be some impact. We know that. It really relates to where we are financially and our abilities to provide, those services above and beyond what we're required to provide. The other piece in there is the advanced trip scheduling, changes in that. Right now, we allow up to 14 days for trip scheduling. Outreach is in the process of setting up an automated booking system where you can use the phone system directly to set up trips for your favorites. That'll be something that starts to roll out this fall. We're going to go to a 7-day advanced trip scheduling in October and a 3-day trip scheduling next July. Again, about 85% of our people already schedule within the three-day window. So the impact overall is small, and we're providing over almost a year's time to sort of transition that that piece of the change into the system. So that's the major changes that are happening in paratransit. That service area and hours ones we understand, and we know that is a major impact. But as the board looked at how we balance the budget in these financial times, we really had to take steps to look at what we could provide. We did continue to allow some of the premium services, actually all of them, and that wasn't the original proposal. And so we did, you know, hear from the community and tried to, address some of the concerns. On the bus and light rail side, also changes there. We've just completed in August a series of public meetings on an 8% reduction in bus service that would go into effect in January of 2010. That 8% includes changes to just about every VTA route that we operate. Some routes are proposed for elimination. Some routes won't operate on Saturdays or Sundays anymore. Some routes, you know, will start later in the morning and end earlier at night. Some routes won't operate as frequently. A route that maybe operates every 15 minutes now might go to 30 minutes in the midday. Another route that might operate 30 minutes might go to 60 minutes. We held 7 public meetings in August on those changes. About 225 people came to our meetings. We got a lot of good feedback. We got another couple hundred comments through our customer information center. And I think the one thing I want to say here in terms of feedback is we've made changes to our proposals. And one of the things I think a lot of people have skepticism with government about is that, do we really listen to the public and try to adjust our proposals? And we do. We've been trying to really get that point across. Our public input is a very important part of our planning process. We've made about 20 changes to these proposals from our original proposals. We've reinstituted some routes. There was a 34 line here in Mountain View that serves midday. A lot of seniors use that route to get the shopping. Their original proposal was to delete that route, and our final proposal is to keep that route. There were some other routes that we were deleting on weekends that we heard from different senior groups, the Almaden Valley. There was a route that Line 13 in the Almaden Valley that we were discontinuing on the midday and weekends. We were putting that back in the midday on the weekdays. So we really do listen and try to consider the comments made by the public. Sometimes they even come up with ideas for cost savings that we hadn't even thought of. We have a lot of very knowledgeable riders that use our system every day and help us with that. So I guess the key, you know, message there is, as VTA, as we make proposals, please give us your input. We do value it. We do use it. That's something I've been working with my staff very hard with over the last couple of years. Light rail will also get impacted a little bit. Mostly, you'll just see shorter trains operating. We operate 1, 2, and 3 car trains. We'll shorten some trains based on demand. Obviously, with the downturn in the economy and the double digit unemployment we're seeing less riders on our system. We'll size our light rail service to meet that demand. Couple other things. That's the paratransit and the bus and light rail. What's happening in those systems? So the bus and light rail changes don't go impact until January. They're not final yet. They do go to our October 1st board meeting, where the board will, either approve or modify the recommendations. We did just go to all of our board committees this last week, and they approved the changes in those committee meetings. So. The proposals are on the website, all the revisions are out there. A couple other things I wanted to mention this group might be interested in. One of the things my department does is we plan our bus stops and improvements at bus stops. We have a pot of money that we get, and it's 80% federally funded. We get about $500,000 every year to improve bus stops. We're always looking for input from folks on what bus stops need improvements. Accessibility-wise, is the sidewalk or the curb cuts there? Is it wide enough to use a lift? We're always looking for feedback. If you have any ideas, you can certainly give them to me, or, the best way is really to call our customer service number, 321-2300. Those then get to my department, and we use those to make changes. And really, we look for feedback from riders, because oftentimes we get feedback that says, I use this bus stop every day, and it's in poor shape, it needs accessibility improvements, and those usually go to the top of the list when we know that real riders are using those bus stops. So that's one piece that's, I'd encourage you, if you know those things, to let us know. The other thing that Roger mentioned is I am the liaison to our Committee for Transit Accessibility. Essentially, it's our Disabled Advisory Committee. They meet monthly to review access to transit, review paratransit, review bus and rail routes, other programs that VTA is providing. I guess the message there is if you anybody's ever interested in being on that committee, we always seem to have vacancies. I encourage you to apply. The application is on our website, or we could get that to you in other ways if that's helpful to you. I think with that, probably what I wanted to say this morning. I'm really happy to be here. I'm pleased to be invited. I'd be happy to answer any of your questions or explain things more. Again, thank you for having me here this morning.
Okay. Hello.
I have two questions, both about open returns. For me personally, when I use an open return, it is from a place like the airport or the trains. And the only time I use it is when the train or the plane is late. And that is something way beyond any control we have. And two of the changes, one is the 8 o'clock cutoff, and the other is not being able to have a timed return and an open return on the same ride. And that makes it literally almost impossible to get home. And I was just wondering, is there any way something like that can be addressed, especially since it's coming from two different public transportation facilities?
That's a very good question. I think with open returns, I think one of the issues we tried to do was look at those programs and tried to make changes that make those more efficient and less costly. I would say that was one of the issues that we had a lot of discussion about, was where customers would book both an open return and a scheduled trip for the same service, and really, that books up resources in the system, two resources for one trip. So I guess the 8 o'clock deadline was a concern because of being able to have to staff sort of for open returns, that we didn't know when those trips were going to happen late at night, and that is a expensive proposition. So that was one piece of it. And I guess you could still call for an open return, and maybe Katie has some more information she wants to share about how that works in
sure
Katie Heatley from Outreach. On the airport ones, we understand that customers have no control when those planes arrive. So what we do is we do monitor. We know the flight number and we monitor. So you can select the fixed time. We won't charge you to send a second vehicle. We'll monitor and see that that flight's arriving late, and we'll adjust and have the driver get you. So that's how we're going to accommodate it. That's outside of your control, and we would certainly not charge for a second vehicle or extra charge. But the folks who are working that evening will monitor when that flight comes in. We can see that, and that will be the easiest way for us to handle that. Okay? So we've already kind of taken that into consideration.
Yeah, and I think it was a good point, too, was that when we had a lot of discussion, and I forgot about that with the second vehicle, that there was a lot of concern that was voiced in the public meetings about, we don't want to strand anybody. That's clearly what we don't want to do. But we need to set policies and procedures that cover the most of the situations. And we always know there's going to be situations that fall outside of the norm, and we don't want to strand people. So, Outreach, I think, has done a very good job of
that policy for the train, too?
Well, we have that policy for the train.
Which?
Roger, we certainly can. I think particularly after 8 p.m. at night, I don't think it's, these become the operating policies that we do inside of our day of service center that make it easier actually for my staff to make sure that we get you at the right time if something's delayed and so that you're not stranded out there. So I think if you work with us one-on-one and we can monitor these, because we can actually monitor these, we'll get you and not charge you extra if something's late. I think we'll be honorable about the money. I think we always have been.
Thank you.
Sure.
What would you like us to schedule for if we have an airplane flight?
Use the mic.
Go ahead.
What would you like us to schedule for if we have an airplane flight returning?
Sure. The time?
Whatever airline you're on and the anticipated arrival time that you get, when you book that ride, the schedule will advise you about how much time that you'll need in addition to, deboard the plane, get your luggage, get to the appropriate place. We'll work with you on a fixed time. Then because you've given us the airlines and the flight number, my team will actually monitor that. We'll see if it's running late or not. And then we certainly ask out of courtesy, once you're ready, call in. Let us know that you actually have arrived, that everything's okay, you're not waiting still for your luggage, and then we'll just come get you. Okay?
Thank you.
I know. Your dog's in.
Here you go, Mike.
I have a question. This may seem far-fetched and probably isn't. Can't be implemented, but perhaps there is a way to arrange with some local taxi service where a rider that can't be accommodated by Outreach because of the late hour can be taken home, and it's up to the rider's responsibility to send in a voucher or something like that to Outreach, so the taxi can be paid. That's one comment. But I have another question: is when the economy does come back, is there any tracking of what was relinquished so it can be reestablished, or is it going to be up to us to reestablish all these things again? Thank you.
I'd like to answer that last one. I think that's a really good question. We've heard that from a lot of folks as we've gone out and reduced different services. One of the challenges will be to understand sort of where the economy rebounds to.
I'm coming.
In terms of, I mentioned earlier that we get, 70% of our money through sales tax. So how far does it return back? And especially in this valley, a lot of our sales tax receipts, surprisingly, are not from consumers buying, TVs or clothes or whatever. It's from one high-tech business, selling products to another high-tech business. So when Cisco sells a router to HP or HP sells computers to some other firm, they pay sales tax, and that accounts for the biggest part of our sales tax receipts. So what happens in the tech sector is very important to us. Another, which is very interesting piece of where we get a lot of our sales tax money, is from auto sales, which is, you know, if you think about, selling autos gets transit more money is really an odd situation, but that's the reality of it. And it was, as we've known, what's happening in the auto industry is really bad. So I think one of the issues will be how far back does the economy rebound, and that is the sort of strategic work that we're going to be doing over the next few months. Internally and then with our board to decide what is the sustainable level of services that we can provide in a long term with predictions on where our funding may be. We're not going to get those money back from the state, that 10 to 12 million we lost. That's, there's some lawsuits out there that transit agencies have grouped together to sue the state about that. But, you know, the likelihood is, state funding is going to be very small for transit in the future. So I think, as I mentioned before, people need to advocate for what's important to them. We do hear that as part of our public input. So, and as we develop our plans, I think, groups like yourself have thoughts and about what's the most important. I think that's really good for us to hear.
Michelle. So I have a question that I'm asking for a friend of mine who couldn't attend today. It's a multi-part question. She lives along a bus route whose services end at 7 p.m. And if she has a ride to go somewhere that is scheduled for pickup before the 7 p.m. and another ride scheduled for pickup to return home at around 9:30, she'd like to know how much it would cost for each ride and how much would it be if her return trip needs to be an open return. She wanted to know is because her route is along a bus route that doesn't run at 9:30. Does that make it one or two premium services because it's an open return and it's after the scheduled time for the bus?
Well, wow, okay.
And I can repeat any of that you need.
No, I got it all. It's just this is a good example of the big change that's going to happen in the system. The example you provided, certainly her leaving trip at 7 o'clock or before 7 o'clock because that's where the bus route that runs in her area, that's a normal paratransit trip, and she's able to take that trip.
That's the $4
trip. The unfortunate piece of that situation you just described is that because the bus doesn't run after 7 o'clock, paratransit is not available anymore for her return trip. So there
it's
is
not,
no
it's open not available re- at all.
At all. There is no open return. There is no premium that covers. She would either have to find a different way of returning home or, reschedule that trip to a time that the bus service runs.
It's a choir rehearsal thing, yeah. So she can't really reschedule that.
Right, understand. And that was the big, I think that's a really good example of the big policy change that's happening with paratransit is that paratransit now operates the same times and hours in areas that the fixed route service runs. Sorry.
Hold on. I've got people ahead of you. Hold on.
This is Kathy Bonella. I have several questions. I came in a little late, so what I'm hearing is we get no service after 8 o'clock. This affects not only me, but many of us. When I go to my relative's house, it's like 4 o'clock and pick up around 8. And I have a bus system, the 51, that's lousy. It's no Saturday, no Sunday, no holidays. Quits at 6 o'clock p.m. So what you're saying with the outreach system, I'm getting screwed all the way around. And you might as well get a key and lock me in my house, because that's what you guys are causing for many of us. You're not working with the people that really, really need it. And nobody, I'm in a wheelchair. I can't walk in a car. I need the outreach service. Because I can't just say, hey, come pick me up in a car. It doesn't happen. So you guys are hurting many of the disabled, many of us. And it's not right. If I go on a trip, like I went on a trip to Reno with the bus, we don't get back till 8:30. And I had a hard time with outreach because I wanted them to pick me up by 8:45. And they gave me a hassle on that. And now I won't even be able to do it because outreach can't pick you up. This service is for the disabled, not to crucify us.
Lupi. Hi, my name is Lupi Medrano, and I have a couple of concerns. I'm glad you mentioned that the state has taken a lot of the funding from transit. I'm sorry that the state saw it fit to do that, but unfortunately the state also saw it fit to balance their budget on the backs of those of us who are the most vulnerable, or shall I say, the easiest targets, because we have no voice, and we get cut left and right. Our SSI income has been cut, some from $60, some to $100 a month. And that's a big, huge cut, because we also have to do a balancing act every month to make ends meet, to see if we have enough money for food, medication, transportation, rent, bills, whatever you have. And so it's a very difficult task to have to balance our budgets. And I understand you're having a hard time as well. But like I said in one of the meetings, you're shooting yourself in the foot, because if you went above and beyond ADA requirements, you had extra revenue, extra clients, but now you're going back down to ADA requirements, so you're going to lose a lot of those clients and lose a lot of that revenue, which is very possible. And now with these other cuts of cutting off service after 8 p.m., you're also going to lose a lot more clients and putting a lot of people out in the dark, stranded, or not having a social life, not having any kind of quality of life because of the rules that are being set here. And we're being cut, we're being told what we can and cannot do, when we can or cannot do it. And so, like Kathy says, you may as well just lock us up because we can't do anything anymore. And it's so unfair. And I understand where you're coming from, but please understand where we're coming from as well. And like I said in one of the meetings, why couldn't you just raise it 25 cents for now and next year another 25 cents so that you don't impact those of us who are struggling? And I understand that there's some people who may be a little more privileged than those of us who are on fixed incomes. So I hope and pray that you do listen to those of us who have a very, very small voice. Thank you very much.
Amen. Thank you.
Yeah.
I'm coming. I'm coming, Chuck.
This is Jack Syverson, and you completely locked me into my house. I go to the Moose Lodge in the evening. I go to Senior Center in the evening. Now I'm staying home. Thank you.
Yeah. Hi, this is Katie Heatley from Outreach. Hi, Kathy. Actually, before I came to this meeting today, I looked up everybody's trips who were coming and going to see if anybody would be impacted by the October 1st change and the changes in the bus routes. And Belinda and Alicia helped me, and it looks like everybody in this room is pretty good. We're all in really good shape. And if I might, if there is a particular trip that I don't know about, I think oftentimes it'll be evening social with family. If you give us the opportunity, if you call Alicia and Belinda, and I know you guys know my folks who run customer service and paratransit, I do have other services such as my senior transportation program or other programs. I can get you that ride from your family. I can get you the ride from the lodge. The only reason I want to speak up a little bit here is most of you folks here are strong advocates. You're very involved in these things, and you have a really good understanding about transportation and paratransit. I want to make sure that after we leave this room today that there's not other people who get concerned about a great amount of fear that there's radical change happening, because frankly by October 1st it's not. And most of the problems I can handle, and I'm not going to let anybody fall through the cracks. So let's take each change one step at a time. Let me work with you guys ID by ID, solve your problems, then we'll catch our breath and we'll look at the next set of changes. That's the easiest way for me to work, and then I can do this in a manner that benefits everybody. So Kathy, we'll look at your trips quite easily. Loopy, you know we do that all the time. And so allow me to work with you, and let's not frighten other customers who aren't here yet with something that may happen to them. And I just want to say one other thing about the software. It's not just the bus directly near where you're being picked up or being dropped off. VTA offers a lot of service, and these buses crisscross. To being the three-quarter mile, the way the bus passes, most frequently it may be there may be the bus nearby that's also running that you're not thinking about. Very rarely does it pop up and say there's not service available. So let us work one-on-one with the particular customer, your friend who needs a trip coming back from choir, and let me see how I can work this out. Thank you.
Hold on.
You're taking away what my thing.
Hey, you're solving it before I get to say it.
Maybe you just solved it. I hope so. I am a musician. But some of you may not think so. I'm in a band, and I'm also starting to do a solo act. And when I do, I go out to places and perform, senior centers and wherever they like to hear the kind of music that I do. Okay, my trouble is I'm not going to be able to get home from these places in certain cases, you see? Mm-hmm. And it's like, okay, so now what the hell do I do? I am just trying to get to the point where I will no longer even require SSI Blind monthly. This would be really good, okay? And Outreach will help me facilitate this. If Outreach will help me facilitate this, you understand?
Right.
So I'm very concerned about that, the decrease in service. And the hour thing and whatnot. And I don't even know where yet I'm about, okay? I'll have to find out.
Right.
And then I'll have to deal with it on an individual basis, obviously. But I can't see, personally, I can't see that curtailing the hours of service is going to be a huge financial savings for Outreach. Maybe it will. Maybe I'm wrong. I don't think it is. I think it's just a way to be able to withdraw an expense. And I don't think it's going to get enough. I don't think you're going to gain enough by it to make it worthwhile. And that's my two cents.
Okay. Now you'll be next.
Okay. Oh, would you? I can. Would you like me to respond? I mean, I.
That's what you're here for.
Sure. It's for a couple questions and a couple things have come up in a couple of the last commenters that a lot of people in the public miss about our services. When you pay your fare, that fare covers about 10% of the cost of your ride. So when people indicate to us that if more people ride, you'll make money, that philosophy doesn't work. Public transit is supported highly by those sales taxes. Like I said, 70% of the cost of our revenues come in from sales tax. So and those trips later at night actually cost us more because there's less service out there. We have to have a proportionally more sort of people, you know, to handle those trips. So it does.
I couldn't hear you. What costs more?
Trips that happen out, you know, later at night proportionally cost more because there's, you know, the resources needed to provide those trips. Again, most of our trips happen, 98% happen in that 6 a.m. to 8 p.m. window, so we can provide those trips very efficiently, you know, grouping people together, you know, scheduling them in advance, all those kind of things that make those trips the most efficient. We did, you know, look at the numbers, and there is cost savings in doing this. It's clearly what, you know, why our board agreed to make these changes, you know, in this whole package of changes. It's not just that. So that, you know, the late night trips. But I think, you know, as Katie mentioned, I think for the small minority of folks that fall into those times where VTA paratransit won't be offered, hopefully there's other ways that your trip needs can be accommodated. There is great understanding by staff and our board that there will be negative impacts on people. They clearly know that. It's really an issue of how much money we have available to provide services and what we are required to do versus what we're not required to do. And I know that's hard. It's not something I want to do as staff. You know, I don't go into work every day and say, oh, I want to cut some more service today. I want to add things. Yeah. And so it's not fun for me to do either. You know, these haven't been enjoyable last few months, going out to tell the public I'm gonna cut your service. I think that's the best, you know, I can give you. And I understand that it's not good, and it's something, you know, unfortunately, that we have to do at this time.
Yes, it's Naomi here.
Yes.
I know of people who work in the evening and come home late. What's going to happen to them with their jobs and transportation getting home from work?
Well, I think it's the same. You know, I mean, unfortunately, I think it's the same situation. You know, if there's other programs that Outreach can find to put those people on.
I wanted to mention about that. You have other programs, but most of us don't even know about those other programs. I didn't know that there was many other programs.
Well, I think that's why, you know, as people call into Outreach with their individual situations, they start to look at what's available to folks.
Well, most people just assume there's just one, you know. They don't know there's other programs until you let people know somehow that they can ask for something else. Right away, they just assume, oh, no, I don't have a ride anymore.
Well, you know? I think the key is that people should call and say, you know, and look at their situation, you know, and talk about what they need, and Outreach will try to figure out how to address that if it's possible.
Donna.
My name is Donna, and I want to bring up something that's a little bit different than what we're talking about, it only because it's very important to all of us. Roger Peterson, Bernice Kandarian, and myself went up to San Francisco to get our renewal for the San Francisco paratransit. And something that should have taken 20 minutes took 2 hours with the help of Katie Heatley, because we were treated very, very badly. Roger and I have both visual impairment and hearing impairment. You couldn't understand them. They're behind glass windows with the speakers, and the speakers weren't working. They did not cooperate with us at all, they did not have the information, the updated information for the recertification, because I had already been recertified by us, but they were telling me that I wasn't. When Katie sent the fax to them, they said, oh, it takes, you have to come back the next day because we can't get faxes that soon. And we already knew that they had gotten the fax because Katie had told us that they had done the, they had gotten the confirmation that they did receive the fax. Well, we were treated very, very poorly. And so I don't know whether you have any control over that or can talk to them about it, because this has happened before. Every 3 years we go through the same trouble.
But and you said you went to this is in San Francisco for research?
The San Francisco paratransit, we use the San Francisco paratransit because I have to go to the eye doctors every couple of months. I know that Roger and Bernice also use it.
Maybe I think Katie has some information on that.
Yeah. And here. The mic. Yeah. Well, then, Katie.
Thank you.
It's a different approach than what we have down here, Jim. It is a bit of a barrier for the Santa Clara County residents who go up there. They have to go in person to get these cards. And it is difficult for those who are hearing or sight impaired because the folks are behind glass. But the information's already, just in terms of communicating and understanding, but the information is in the regional database already. And then if there's any kind of snafu, we fax a duplicate copy up there. But it is a repetitive challenge, and it is something that probably needs to be worked out between agencies so that people don't spend large amounts of time there and have to go back the next day. We intervene as best we can over the phone to try and straighten it out and kind of snowplow so they walk out with their cards that day. But I think in fairness, given how difficult it was that day for our four folks up there, it's almost as if there are a series of barriers to actually kind of getting it done in an easy manner. And so it is something that has to sort of be worked out. And they're dealing with a number of different things, like the new magnetic cards, and there's lots of challenges up there right now.
Okay, well, that's something we can, you know, we certainly have contacts at the paratransit program in San Francisco, and that's something we can see if we can make better for you. I think that's a valid concern. Well, sure, I mean, you know, for the big U.
The big U. Well, my name is Rose, and I'm back to the scheduling for the same trip of regular trip and open ride.
Mm-hmm.
Because sometimes, quite often, we go to the doctor and we don't get taken when we're supposed to or whatever. And like, say, I schedule my trip already for an hour and a half in advance, but I can't schedule an open ride in case he doesn't get done. So what I used to do is I'd cancel my ride so it wouldn't come and then call for the open ride when I walked out of his office. So that kind of hurts because I would, and a lot of times I'd get taken, so I wouldn't need the open ride. And I can't see where it saves anything because the people, they're still going back and forth in their cabs, and they're still, you know, they're either close to you or they're not, and it either takes you an hour and a half or they're within 5 minutes of your place. So I can't see where it makes any difference whether you got both of them scheduled or not. Anyway, it's going to be a hassle. Okay? Thank you.
Thank you. I think that's one of those situations where we understand this is outside of your control, and Katie's group's going to work to make sure that you get taken care of and you get your trip there.
Yeah. Okay.
I'd like to comment that we are running out of time, so Roger, we will need to wrap this up soon.
Can I ask? This is Lorraine Brown. Katie, recently there's been something and. On the, what do you want to call it, PCA, when somebody, we've been told that if two people are clients of Outreach, they cannot schedule one, I can't schedule me and PCA if that other person is a Outreach client. And like my husband and I are both on Outreach, and so going by that reasoning, my husband can't go as a PCA with me in the same ride from the same house to the same place, and it just doesn't make sense. And that's what we're getting from schedulers is, you know, is they'll ask, is your PCA a client? And if you say yes, then they'll say, no, you can't do that. And if you lie, you know, I don't like lying, but I'm going to do it.
Yeah.
My apologies for that. No, certainly a husband and wife can travel with each other. If you are actually your husband's PCA or vice versa, there should be no problem. I think what they're trying to address is we do have programs that will send other people, for example, who are nonverbal, may not have any cognitive skills, et cetera, to be somebody else's PCA when in fact they're actually just a different client. They're not there as a caregiver, they're simply two clients riding. And we really want to be able to know which clients by ID number are on our vehicles at all points in time. for the purposes if there's an emergency or other issues, if somebody's actually with a caregiver or PCA who can speak for them or escort them or are there for a reason, because that's what a personal care attendant is. It's somebody who's there to help you with your travel. Then, in fact, your husband and your wife, that's all perfectly valid. But if we go to a particular group home and we have multiple clients and the other client is said to be the person's PCA, but they're unaware that they're filling that role, they may not be capable of filling that role. And that's a disservice to both of those clients. We really want, if there's a caregiver at a nursing home or somewhere, and there's a real PCA, we'd like that PCA to ride with that person if that's their role. So my apologies if you're kind of falling through the cracks. Just correct the person right away. Ask for Belinda or Alicia, and we'll fix that. But I hope you do understand that the difference between a PCA, and we certainly don't want to impact you negatively. But that's sort of the reason. Thank you.
Okay.
No.
Just wanted to be safe.
Okay. We got to end this. We got two more people, but we're running out of time. Can we move? Well, I know, but we got to take a recess.
We are going to take a recess. If the membership really wants to extend this, we can. But we have a rather packed business meeting, so...
Perhaps Jim will be available for individuals to talk to during the break.
Yeah, certainly I can stay for a while, and if there's other questions, people can email me or something also. So, I can stay around for a little bit during the break.
You want to pass along your email or telephone number?
Sure. How about my will my email work? Okay. I really don't mind. But phone is actually hard to get a hold of me. I'm usually not in my office. And email is I get all the time and respond to. My email is James JAMES.unites UNITES at VTA.org. Or alternatively, if you have questions and you want to call our VTA customer service center and you have a question and say, hey, make sure Jim gets this, they'll make sure Jim gets this. So that's not a problem, too.
Is your number 9764 VTA?
No, sir, Jim who?
Yeah. No, they know me well.
Okay, Roger, is it okay if we... Yeah. Wrap this up then.
Yeah, I want to thank Jim for coming today. And I also want to thank Katie for being here. That's great. Talk about service, you guys. We have good folks running these programs, and they don't like doing any of this any more than we do, any more than we like having it done to us. So... remember to vote next time. So, Mike, we're going to have a break now, right?
We're going to have a break, and we'll come back at 11:10.